CBS Radio. You can turn that down, Jack, if you want. Don't be scared.
Turn down your voice?
866-570-PEN, 7366. Here's the list, okay? Kevin Pollak, Louis Black, Lisa Lampanelli, Howie Mandel, Meryl Marco, David Brenner, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, Trey Parker, Drew Carey, Bob Saget, Phyllis Diller, The Passing Zone, Doug Stanhope, Fred Willard. Those are the aristocrats that have been on the show so far.
Jesus.
And now we add to that list Jackie Martling.
That was the most intimidating list I've ever heard in my life. Thank God Phyllis Diller was in there.
Now, are you playing, are you going to like a show tonight or something? You playing somewhere?
Because I'm
on your mailing list now.
No,
you send one email to Jackie Martling, you get every single thing he's doing in his life.
Well, you know, it's funny because people say, wow, you're working so much. But if you read the thing, it's like 1 gig a month. It covers me up till, you know, June. Yeah, I'm working this Saturday, tomorrow night.
And there you go. Good, good. Very good.
I'm working radio.
You sure are. You sure are.
Tomorrow night at the Vail Levitt Hall at 8 p.m., I'm working with a band that's fantastic named Cadillac Moon that are old friends, and this is like a Christmas show I'm opening up, and then they're doing this stuff, and then we're playing songs together. It's Riverhead on Long Island. But that's not, I'm here because you asked me. And I love you.
Okay, good. That's
because I can't get enough of that voice. You know, Ron Zimmerman wanted to do a pilot years ago for a sitcom with me and Gilbert called Loud and Louder.
Okay.
And I think we have to throw you in the mix.
Loudest.
Loud, louder, and loudest.
Loudest, yeah.
Distinguishable voices. That's why I get the calls, right?
Now, Rudy was saying that you were you're an inspiration to him from you laughing on the Stern Show.
Absolutely.
So, in other words, you saw me trying to be a comedian. You said, this is ridiculous. I'm going to be an engineer.
Pretty much.
An inspiration because you like to laugh? Or
honestly, when you laughed for whatever reason during the show, it just it kept me on, even if I didn't like what was going on with the show. Your presence is what's the word?
Luckily, this is regular radio. I can't say anything dirty about how that makes me feel.
You can say it. We'll just dump it later.
But I always told people for the 15 years I was on that show, Robin laughed at everything, mm-hmm. and I laughed at what was funny.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and that's the truth. It's like you see Howard say, so the sun came up, and but then if something was funny, I would, and people always thought that the only time I laughed was when I wrote a joke. Mm-hmm. Which was wrong. I'm an equal opportunity guy. If something's funny, I laugh. If it's real funny, I laugh real hard. And many times Howard would say something that was hysterical, or Fred would write something, and I'd pass it to him, and I'd crack up. And so many times I'd go home, and my wife Nancy would go, oh, the greatest line today was such and such, and I go, oh, crap. So what's wrong? Fred wrote that. Or Howard said that on his own. Oh, but you laugh so hard. Well, I laugh when it's funny. Right. You know, just happened to be coincidentally sometimes what I wrote, you know.
Now, that was, you know, and Howard never really talked about that. I tried to talk to Howard about how nutty it was to be in that studio. I did the show a couple dozen times, and how nutty it was. I was trying to think of another form of art where that kind of stuff is happening in real time.
You know,
you'd be writing all the time and handing him the pieces of paper, and he would be synthesizing what he was saying with what you handed him and doing a beautiful thing, and he'd never really talk about it in depth. Or maybe he did, and I
just
didn't hear.
Well, you know, the truth, it's like, nobody ever interviewed Carson where he talked about which writer was his favorite or what subjects were his favorite for his writers. I mean, what nobody knows doesn't, they don't have to know that. Who the hell cares? All you know is Carson's doing his monologue and you love him, all right, or you hate him or whatever. But it was always interesting because some people had no idea I was writing. Mm-hmm. Other people like, oh, Jackie writes everything funny Howard says. I'm saying, no, that's not true at all. I helped. And the analogy I always said was, it's like a sprinter. If you run the 100-meter dash in 10 seconds, you're a world-class sprinter. But if you do it in 9.8, you're the champion of all time. So I'm like a little wind in his back. So if he's already brilliant and you give him a little bit of extra edge, let alone when I got there and started finagling the thing with the writing, I became a conduit so Fred could also write.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden he's got his sense of humor, my sense of humor, and Fred's sense of humor. Not only does he have three, but they're completely different senses of humor. Because Howard's broad and wide and conceptual. Fred's from another planet, and I'm a punchline guy.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a guy coming at you from all three different directions, which made him a monster. And it was so interesting, Penn. I know you love comedy. There were so many times, I bet you a dozen times, maybe 15 times over the course of 15 years, I would write something, and Fred would hand me a note, and it would be verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
What he'd hand it to me, and I'd go, it's there already, in the bin. He'd hand me a note that I had already written. And it wouldn't be like to get to the other side. It'd be something from another planet that we both saw this avenue and was always really interesting.
Now, how did you develop that? Because that is not in Bob and Ray and Gene Shepard and all the heroes that we all have.
As far as
they
as
didn't
I
kn- do that.
Well, as far as I know, it had never been done. Now, I'm not a radio guy, and I never was a radio guy. I was never looking for a radio gig. Excuse me, I don't know how to use the cough button. So, I know in the old days, Hope and Crosby, if they were doing a show, they'd have their writers and they'd like rehearse. And if Hope said something funny, Crosby'd say to his writers, you know, I need something better. And they'd come up with something better so that when they do the next rehearsal, he'd top him. But it was never happening in real time.
Yeah.
Okay. when I started on the show, the first. It's hard to know where I can go. I was on the show with Al Rosenberg, who's a very funny guy who used to do New Fringno. Money, right? And this was so long ago that one of Howard's sponsors was Coca-Cola. Now, okay. You with me?
Okay.
So he's just got to New York. We're on from 4 to 8. He's on from 4 to 8, but it's 4 to 7 whenever there's a home game. A Knicks home game, because we're on WNBC. So at 7 o'clock, the entire tri-state area male population is listening to us because they're ready for the Knicks game. So we're just about to go off the air and switch over, and Lou Ferrigno's there, and Howard's reading a live spot from Coca-Cola. And this is, as far as I know, the first time I wrote something that was a classic. And Howard reads it, and he says, the friends at Coca-Cola want to make sure that you have plenty of Coca-Cola and snacks on hand for the game. And I heard snacks, right? And Lou's hard of hearing. So I wrote the word snacks with a question mark and wrote what it sounded like with a question mark and handed Lou Ferrigno. He immediately knew. Al's so sharp. He goes, well, isn't that Howard? I said, and he said, you know, make sure you have lots of Coca-Cola and snacks. Hey, you can't talk like that. And Howard immediately caught on. So we did this lewd riff for like 30 seconds or they did it for 60 seconds. The place went nuts because it's all these crazy guys listening to us, and it was the perfect double entendre. It was nobody could get mad at us for being dirty.
Right, he never said it.
And it was like, whoa. And then he used to do a helicopter reporter called Mama Look a Boo Boo Day. And one time I came in with a whole bunch of, black jokes and slang and stuff that I thought would be good for Mama Look a Boo Boo Day. I said, here's some stuff you might want to use for the reporter. And he looked at me like, you know, what are you doing? Like, he didn't say it, but he's like, I don't need your help. And a couple of days later, I was listening to the show. This is long ago, and I used to listen because I was excited to be on the show. He's doing Mama Look a Boo Boo Day, where he held a megaphone.
He was a
traffic reporter,
yeah.
And he was a black guy, and it was hysterical. And I start hearing the stuff I get.
Yeah.
So the next week, I walk in and kind of sheepishly handed him some more, and he kind of sheepishly took it, and nothing was exchanged, you know. And slowly but surely, I start writing little ideas on little slips of paper. And then I was only on one day a week. And at some point, I just went and got a stack of 8x10 paper and a Sharpie. I said, I might as well do it right, and wrote it. And we never discussed it. And then Fred started handing me a little piece of paper, and I'd rewrite it. And at one point, I took a pile of paper and put it in front of Fred and said, listen, write it yourself and write it neat, because by the time you write it, pass it to me, I rewrite it and put it up there, we've lost the moment. So now Fred's writing, I'm writing, never discussed it, and all of a sudden he's going to mornings, I get a phone call, I'm going to Virginia Beach, I'm going to the club, you got to call home. I'm like, my parents are dead. You know, Nancy never called me on the road. Hello, you got to call Howard Stern. Okay, and I call up, we're going to mornings. I need a price for 2 days a week. I just want you to come in and do your thing with the notes. That is the total discussion of my job that we had in 18 years. Never anything, clean it up. The one other thing he said was, don't ever edit. Let me edit.
Okay, yeah. Well, that was really important part of it.
And he's so brilliant. Nobody else could really sit there. I would insult him or Fred, and in real time, he'd look at it and switch it and insult me with the note that I just wrote.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he's so brilliant. So it was a perfect symbiotic thing.
Now, you know,
I didn't mean to go so long, but
you're
kind
of a friend of mine, Jack, and I hate to bust you on something, but the piece of paper was 8.5x11, not 8x10. I just everything else you said in the story, I completely buy.
You know, in England,
I hate to bust you.
In England, it's 8x10 because I was trying to write a book with a guy from England, and he sent me the masters on 8x10. Have you ever tried to put 8x10 in a copy machine.
Exactly.
It's 8.5x11.
You know, and I was fascinated.
Are hounded by fact.
I am.
You're chained.
But you know, when I was a kid,
I'm saying, what is he going to bust me for? I'm going to the cornucopia in my head, like, what's he got me on?
When I was a kid, you know, I used to think that symphony orchestras, I think a lot of kids think this, that the conductor was somehow signaling them as to what to play.
How does he possibly communicate with all of them?
You know, when I first did the Stern Show, and I went in there and I sat down, of course, I was terrified, and there's nothing scarier than going on Stern your first time in the world.
And you are such, nobody would have ever known in a million years that you were terrified.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to make sure that what I'm going to say is good, and I come off okay, and I cover my ass, and all the stuff you have to do. And I see you writing stuff and handing it to Howard, and all I can think of is, this is my dream of a symphony orchestra. This is what I thought. I thought there was someone in the world smart enough to be able to do art in real time, to have stuff handed. And I wanted nothing but to talk about that, and I knew that somehow it violated some rule.
It wasn't really like a harsh violation, but it was kind of like... You know.
I didn't want to bust him. I wanted to sing the praises of being able to have all that stuff. And I just did this game show for NBC called Identity, you know. And I'm on there, and I'm up there in front of the people and the 11 cameras and all that's going on. And I have an earpiece in my ear, and I have a prompter. And the prompter is not giving me exactly what I say. The prompter has facts and suggestions. There's one person on the prompter and one person in my ear.
You got to suck it in and paraphrase.
And I'm saying this. You know, I'm finally doing what I thought was so wonderful that I saw Jackie and Howard doing. It was great. And I've always thought...
Was it exhilarating?
Wonderful. It's wonderful. And you also, I can understand how if people aren't in show business, then that becomes a simple breakdown of, oh, he's not just making it all up himself. Because there are people that you'll tell them that Letterman has writers, and it breaks their heart. They just don't get it.
Because it's black or white.
Yeah.
Which is absurd. You know, knowing what to use and what not to use. You know, there's a lot to be said about it, too. There's a lot of bullies that go into bars, mm-hmm. and they walk around and bully. They never get in a fight, never touch anybody, because they got the two guys with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You're Howard Stern. You know you got something funny sitting there.
Uh-huh.
You might never go to it.
Mm-hmm.
But because the you feel good about it. You know, I got his back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So he's talking to you and fooling around. And it's one thing, you know, people that... never caught on to, which is funny. I said, you ever notice that he always wore dark glasses when he interviewed somebody? And then, mm-hmm. yeah, because he's, you know, the demon thing, and then the dark and the devil, and it's how it's starting. But he put on the dark glasses to interview you, and there's a screen right here with what we're writing. So as he's looking at the screen, you have no idea where his pupils are going.
Oh, so you finally
going.
Went electronic?
Huh?
Did you finally go?
Well, after we did the E show, we started putting it in. For the first couple of years, I was actually, you know, I was throwing over the barrier, which was absurd. But then once we had the E show, I was actually putting it down under a camera. So he'd be looking at you. So here's the TV screen. So his eyes are looking, and you'd have no idea. And you think he's wearing glasses because that's his personality.
Sure. To misdirect from the nose. That's what we all thought.
You know, and it's so funny, the difference in people.
I mean, that's a magician point of view.
I know.
That's the magician point of view, I'm just telling you.
Listen, I'll expose the writing thing, but I'm not going for the nose thing. You know what? We did the Gary roast the other day on Stern Show. I guess it's on YouTube, so I went and looked at it.
Yeah.
And I had a couple good lines, but the best line is so stern. The place is packed in, and I said that. I think it's really great, Howard, that you found a girl that loves you for being yourself. Do you really think that joke needs any more? and the place went nuts. It's so funny because to this day, there's so many people that have no idea I was ever writing because I sat there and I had a good laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good target. They loved picking on me, and I could take it all day and fight back. And I was fun. So that was almost enough reason for me to be in the studio.
Probably was enough reason.
So nobody had to know that I was writing anything. So you never know who's tuned in. And as the years went on, more and more people knew. And less than people, you know, but people didn't care. We were sitting there, and this happened on the same day back to back, which is what made it so much fun for me. I'm sitting there, and when a big celebrity came in, they wouldn't wait till commercial. You know, they wouldn't wait till long. You know, it'd be 40 minutes till a commercial break and make the poor guy wait in the green room. Dom DeLuise is there. So you're not going to wait to bring in Dom DeLuise. Sure. Hey, how, Dom DeLuise is here. Bring him in, Gary. And Dom DeLuise came in and sat down. He wasn't sitting there 3 minutes. And I'm whipping the note. This was before we had the camera. So I was like whipping him over and putting him on what is the easel, whatever you call it. So I'm writing and putting it up. I'm writing it. And Howard's hammering. And Dom and him are flying. It's hysterical. And we go to commercial. And Dom DeLuise turns to me and says, this is fantastic. Just like you're talking. Yeah. He says, I never saw a real-time operation like this. Like, you guys are connected at the hip. This is a beauteous thing to watch. I'm like, Dom, I got the chills right now telling you the story. And this is Dom DeLuise, who I love, right? I can't believe it. He leaves. Bruce Jenner comes in. 45 minutes. I'm writing notes and whipping them to Howard. And he is insulting Bruce Jenner up, down, around the block. But having fun. Sure, you know, having a great time. We go to commercial. Bruce Jenner turns to me and says, so what do you do? And I said, I keep telling Howard what time it is. He says, that's what I thought. Back to back. Back to 45 minutes. I'm writing something, putting it up. Howard's saying something. Writing something, put up, he's saying.
But how fast does Dom DeLuise do the decathlon? That's the question.
Exactly. And Dom, you know, he'll never have Bruce's nose.
We got to take a break? Is it about time to take a break? I think I was looking at the clock, but you weren't signaling me.
I thought you were looking at the clock.
I thought you were looking at the clock because my story sucked.
No, it was really good. I just thought, we have another minute and a half. What I want to talk to you about, and I think we're going to wait till after the break because I want to get into this. You know, there's an expression, art thrives in its limitations. And I thought that the years that you guys were doing, you know, free radio, FM everywhere and fighting the FCC, that a lot of the funniest stuff, like you said about snacks being done with Lou Ferrigno, were the things that were thriving upon that limitation. You didn't really want...
That was the whole show.
I felt that was. And I want you to talk a little bit about that. But you know, I'm going to take a break now.
Good, because I want to ask you some questions about what I'm allowed to say. So
we'll talk about that in between. Okay, this is Penn Jillette. Michael Goudeau was saying nothing in Las Vegas. I'm in New York City with Jackie Martling, Jackie the Joke Man. If you want to call another day, because I'm just going to talk to Jackie the whole day. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Jackie Martling is in the studio talking about when you used to come into the studio every goddamn morning.
Before we go one step further, you're a big music aficionado. Have you been to see Les Paul since you've been in New York?
Last Monday.
Oh, you've done it?
Last Monday. And,
just wanted to make sure you've done the experience.
It's just one. When's the last time you went?
2 weeks ago. I get up on stage with him every time.
Yeah. He tried to get me up on stage.
And you didn't go?
I stood up in the audience and did shtick with him, but I just couldn't bring myself. First of all, there was an upright bass up there, and I was terrified that he'd have me play with him, and I'd have to play with Les Paul, then I would choke.
And you'd have to follow Nikki. Was it blonde Nikki?
She's a monster.
Oh, my
she's
God.
Just wonderful.
Oh,
she's just wonderful.
On too many levels.
So, yeah, isn't she great?
The first time I met him was his 85th birthday, and Keith Richards was in the audience, and it was one of the classic things of all time. I got up and told filthy jokes, and then got up again. Les was like so thrown. He's like, come up here. He brought me up a second time, and I told dirty jokes, and I said, listen, Keith, I'm really sorry. You know, I didn't mean to tell dirty jokes with your mother in the audience. And meanwhile, Keith Richards' mother was a blues singer. Did you know that?
No.
How could we not know that?
That should be something we...
But Les knew her from the old days and was trying to get her to come on stage. She wouldn't get on stage, and then totally kidding around, I said, Keith, you know, I didn't mean to tell dirty jokes with your mother up there. Meanwhile, if she's a blues singer, she could tell me a few. But it was, and I was up with Les, and my father had passed away, and Les is him. You know, with the thinning hair, the red, the twinkle in his eye, a little naughty, and we had an immediate rapport, and I've been on stage with him 50 times in the last 6 or 7 years.
I was just a little bit... I stood in the audience, and he was asking me how a magician that he saw work for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, how he did the tricks, and I just explained it to him. You know, I never figured that out in all my years. Well, here's how it's done, Les. It's just, and it was really fun, and he's just...
He matter-of-factly makes... I know you're a show business nut.
Yeah.
When he casually references... W.C. Fields Mel Blanc, and he's got
Bing Crosby. I mean, on the music side, it's just. I was talking to Bing Crosby backstage.
Well,
no one will ever be as popular in this country as Bing Crosby. He was getting radio shows that had 85% of the people in the country listening. You'll never get that again.
And do you know that the reason Ampex was started because Bing Crosby asked Les to go make 52 track tape recorders.
Really?
Like somebody brought over a tape recorder from Germany, and Bing Crosby was complaining that he had to go to the studio when he wanted to play golf. So Les wrote to the company, told them that the head was worn out. They sent him another head, and he invented Multitrack.
I knew he invented Multitrack.
He played it for Bing, and Bing said, make 50 of these. And that was the beginning of the Ampex Corporation. I mean, but he casually... So when I go on stage, I tell dirty jokes, of course. But one of the things I mean with him. But the first thing I do is, listen, I'm a dirty joke teller, but I got to tell you the stories about Les he doesn't tell. Because, you know, he's there at the standing at the urinal next to Bing, and Bing's like,
so how's the new singer?
And Les goes, he's all right. And they go out to rehearse, and it's Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And then Les finishes a story where Frank Sinatra goes for a low note and doesn't get there, and Bing goes,
this is the way it's done.
And, you know, yeah. Of course, hits the note, and the place goes nuts. And then this is a great story. We should be talking about us, but this is Les's story. But Les is sitting there.
It may be that Les Paul and Bing Crosby are more interesting than us.
Oh, it might be hard to imagine. You'll never get my ego to go there. But Les Paul was such an icon that we can't even imagine. There were two guys that had a band, and they went to audition for a gig. And the guy said, you guys are all right, but I'm not crazy about your repertoire. Why don't you go learn some Les Paul Mary Ford songs? They went home and learned a couple of Les Paul Mary Ford songs and came back, played for the guy, and they got the gig. And it was Lennon and McCartney. And not only that, I get the chills. Not only that, as I'm standing on stage at the Iridium telling the audience,
yeah.
I'm standing in the exact place where McCartney was standing when he told the story to Les. On stage at the Iridium like a year ago. Now, how crazy is that? And then Les goes, yeah, he used to come in here. You know, he comes in here with Heather. And and he said, and then Les says, yeah, I knocked on her leg for good luck.
Oh.
Hold on. And the audience goes nuts. And then he goes, Paul should have done that. 92 years old. The audience goes nuts. And I'm not setting him up. That's it. You know, that's him being.
That's him. He's just great. And Nicky's a monster. And the rhythm guitar player, you know.
Lou Paolo is wonderful. And John.
Yeah. It's just a great. When I went the first time, I went with Lou Reed. So, I mean, you just cannot go to see Les Paul without superstars everywhere. Everybody has to pay respect to Les.
I've followed. What's his face? Merle Haggard, Slash, Matt Dillon. Yeah, the whole world's been there.
Yeah, it'd have to
Did you hear the greatest Paul McCartney line?
No.
They asked Paul, they said, now that you're divorced, do you ever... Is that the greatest? I almost fell down. All right.
That's a great joke. So now
promote my gross mask.
Okay, good.
Just tell him once and we can leave it away.
There's this thing called the Gross Master that he has right here.
Discovery Channel stores came to us, asked us to make that. The only place it's available is Discovery Channel stores and on their internet site. And it's jokes, but they're not curses and it's not sex. It's duty, poo-poo, and snot. It's good for anybody in the world.
I'll hit one here.
The left eye is... to stupid noises, the nose is a joke, and the right eye repeats.
Okay. Those are the noises. And now the nose will be a joke?
Hopefully.
What's worse than biting into an apple and finding a worm? Biting into an apple and finding half a worm.
Now, whose voice is that?
Jackie's.
You do that? You do the voices?
You know what? I was making these kids gadgets, and I'm like... There's nothing harder than selling something to a kid because adults will give you the benefit of the doubt and smile. A kid will it'll just walk away. So I wrote, I did a thing before this called the Joke Master Junior. I'm making a lot of money with these things, but I made all these kids knock knock jokes and chicken jokes, but it didn't work. I'm like, you can't do that for a kid. And all of a sudden, I was doing another project on the computer, and I sped it up, and all of a sudden, it was like, I just unlocked it. Because by speeding it up, it was like Bozo putting on... A guy can't walk into a kid's party and go, hey, kids!
Yeah.
But if you got on the red wig, the nose, and the big shoes, hey, kids, it works.
Why does a gorilla have big nostrils? Because it has big fingers.
Stupid! It's fun. Sure. And a guy can laugh at that with his kid, you know what I mean?
You're not going to feel a little bit creepier.
Right.
And speaking of laughing at that with your kid, you have a show on Sirius now, right?
Yeah, what I was going to say.
So now you can say anything you want. And,
the truth,
how does that feel?
The truth of it is, I was on the, last week with Leslie, with the radio chick.
Mm-hmm.
I go on with Jim Kerr on Q104. And it's fun to have to work within the rules. Now, of course, I, you know, if you're Howard or you and you're going hours and hours at a time, it, I'm sure it can't be easy. And I know the restrictions have gotten so ridiculous that it's really stupid. It was stupid enough 10 years ago. So, of course, it makes sense. But trying to dodge the rules, I mean, if there's a field, how much fun is it to cross the field? Now, if there's a fence and it says, do not cross this field, what feels better? I'm sorry. That's just how it is. People like to get away with something. Or not even get. It's like dancing. You have to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And dancing around the rules, I think, is more fun.
Well, you know, I my feeling is that it is morally reprehensible that there is an FCC in this country. It is absolutely wrong. What I would like to see is a world where you had no rules whatsoever from the government. The people with the guns should not make rules over what you say. There should be free speech absolutely unfettered. And then your radio stations should have rules. And then the DJs that are working with that radio station should do a little dance, a little monkeying around back and forth. You know, what I loved about you guys when you guys are really rocking on that show was that you were having to work as adults in a grade school repertoire. You know, the FCC was making you infantile.
Which
was
charming.
It was really charming because once you go all the way, also, who are you competing with? Once you can say anything, then you're competing with George Carlin.
Yeah,
and, you know, well, I would rather not compete with George Carlin.
Right,
he's just too good.
Right. And meanwhile, you're trying to talk off the top of your head and blah, blah, blah. And It's not really a freedom, you know. Like, I guess when you just get to talk like yourself. I listen back to my show. I'm going to plug myself. I'm on 7 o'clock Tuesday nights on Howard 101 on Sirius. And we do a dirty joke show. So, of course, I love that because I can play, you know, hunks from my CD exactly as they are on the CD. So people get to hear for the first time. They never heard in 15 years what I do on stage because you couldn't play it.
Sure.
Now they know exactly what they're getting if they come to see me, which is fun. But you don't get real dirty. You know, in a perfect world, there'd be no rules, but you and I would say, all right, people are listening to us in the car on their way to work at 8:30 in the morning. Let's, between ourselves, not say anything that they don't want to hear.
Exactly.
We don't have to curse and be. What if the guy's got his wife in there and he wants to hear us be funny, but he doesn't want us to use the F word every two seconds?
Well, taste,
we don't need to.
Taste, but not censorship. You know,
right.
That's
right.
What you mean. But you know so much about the history of show business, and also, I've always wondered what kind of antecedents there are for the guy who just comes out and tells jokes. I mean, every comedian, no comedians just tell jokes.
Know,
they all do character stuff and tell stories, and you've got this act where you just, you know, try to stump Jackie and tell jokes. Who are the other guys that did that?
The truth of it is, it's so funny because you know, Henny Youngman, for the most part, so many people thought he was a schmuck for a long time. And then all of a sudden, one day, he was the comedian's comedian. He mm-hmm. was hysterical because he told jokes and everything he said was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's happening to me right now. All of a sudden, everybody's saying, like, people, instead of saying, Jackie just does old jokes, now people are saying, well, people who do old jokes are idiots. Except for Jackie, who's got it down to an art form.
But you know,
you know what I mean.
But still, Henny Youngman was still different. He was doing one-liners, and you come out and tell jokes like
joke.
A guy would tell to another guy. And
there is no precedent because I didn't set out to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, because anybody would have planned, wouldn't have done it. You know, the truth is,
what was your plan? How'd you?
I was a musician.
Uh-huh.
And a songwriter. I graduated from college as a mechanical engineer. I'm a pretty smart guy. I went to Michigan State. But I played in a band. And when I graduated, it was like, well, do I want to put on a suit and work for Ford? Or do I want to keep my hair long, smoke pot, and play music?
Mm-hmm.
Tough decision. So I played music through the whole 70s. And like in 1978...
What, wouldn't you like cover bands or original
stuff? No, we played original music. It's funny because in a month I have a CD of my music coming out. I call it the 30-year detour.
Because mm-hmm.
that's where my heart has always been.
Sure.
Howard always made fun of my songs, and rightfully so, because they're ridiculous. But here I am 30 years old, and I'm in a three-piece band. You never heard this story. This is a classic story. I'm in a three-piece band. One night, this is not good for me, but it's such a good story. The two guys come up to me and say, Jackie, we're going to leave the band and start our own band. And I said, listen, I'm not Einstein. But if the there's three guys in the band, and two of them leave to start. That's kicking me out of the band. So my whole life, I've remembered every dirty joke I've ever heard since third grade. They've stuck to my head. I just know them all. I know more than anybody in the world, literally, at this point. And I love to tell them, always love to tell them. The reason I tell dirty jokes is because anybody with a brain knows if I tell you a joke in a bar, I'm doing it because I want you to laugh. Mm-hmm. And you're going to laugh harder at a dirty joke. It's not because I want to be dirty. It's because I want to get the best laugh. The reason I pare them down so much is I want to get as many laughs as I can in a short amount of time. But I don't mind telling a long joke because it's going to be worth it, et cetera, et cetera. And when the band broke up, I was already playing my guitar. We always told jokes in the band. Then I was playing my guitar and telling jokes. And then I ran into a couple comedians. And I'm back to, do I want to go to work for Ford or do I want to stay on stage? I started telling my dirty jokes on stage with my guitar, and I never looked back. Within 6 months, I had a record out. Nowadays, you can't go to a comedy club and not walk out where somebody's not selling their record. I was the first guy and the only guy that did it for the first 5 or 10 years because I had been a musician. I knew how to make an album.
Sure.
I had 3 comedy albums, sent them to Howard. That's how I got to know Howard. But there was no plan. My idea, I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell these jokes on stage. I'll make an album full of dirty jokes. People who love dirty jokes will buy this record. Forget whether or not they like me. Mm-hmm. It's a great collection of dirty jokes.
And they're going to retell them.
Who wouldn't want that? Well, the answer was not a lot of people. I mean, I sold so few. To this day, I sell very few albums and CDs. I mean, I did fine with the Stern Show and stuff, but it's nowhere near what you'd think. People thought I sold millions. You know, like maybe 150,000 hot dogs and donuts. That was the biggest one. But my whole thing is just telling the jokes and telling the jokes. And what I can't understand is you can't do something in show business that doesn't get imitated.
Mm-hmm.
The worst movie in the world, if it does any business, somebody makes a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Why some kid hasn't said, that jerk tells jokes and makes a lot of money. Why don't I tell jokes and make it? I was thinking of having a Jackie the Joke Man school teaching people how to go out and tell these stupid jokes.
We've just shown that imitation is the most sincere form of flattery.
And nobody wants
and
to flatter.
And you're lacking it. We'll be back after this with Jackie Marley, Jackie the Joke
Shot
Man.
Shot myself in the foot.
Yeah, I'm here with Jackie the Joke Man. Do you ever get on stage and play guitar with Les Paul?
I only did that once. There was one night where Les was playing. And
how big are you? Yeah, okay.
No. But let me tell you a story.
Okay.
I've played guitar for a long time, and there's a song that I play that's coming out of my album that's a dirty joke. Do you know who Steve Goodman was?
Sure, of course.
Amazing, right?
Sure.
Amazing. I went to see Steve Goodman one night, and he started doing a song that was a traveling salesman joke. And I was so excited. And halfway through the song, he took a wrong turn, and it was a moral story.
Yeah.
And I was upset because I thought he had my friend Steve Goodman. Not my friend, but he was a big fan of mine. I didn't know till after he died. Here I am, all excited that I'm going to get a new joke. And he upset me. I went home and took one of my classic old dirty jokes that I've been telling for years and put it into, you know, rhymes and made a dirty joke song.
So you played that with Les Paul?
Well, what happened was Les was up there and Lou was up there. Another guy got up and played guitar and then another guy. So at one point there's 4 guitars on stage, which was such overkill. So, and
like
then he
Rolling
said,
Thunder.
Jackie the Joke Man's here. So I thought to be funny, I would go up and say, give me a guitar. So I took Lou's guitar and played the Ballad of the Traveling Salesman and Les was blown away. He loved it. It's just finger picking. You know, it's that Arlo Guthrie Walking Blues finger picking just so you can tell a joke over it. You know?
Now you don't in your act take jokes from established comedians and retell them. You don't steal stuff.
Well, you can't because people don't tell jokes.
Very rarely.
What I do is I the jokes I've heard through my life.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, it's so funny because I watch the jokes come around. You know.
But have you ever traced one back?
I try, but you know how hard it is. You know,
Steve Allen did a whole thing on that.
No
one's ever successfully done it.
Do you know, well, the old joke is that, you know, that somebody in Iowa writes them and puts them in a bottle and floats them down the stream. A lot of people say, you know, they come from prison.
Wall Street.
And a lot of them are written backwards. You know, there's a funny idea and then, or a funny punchline. Then you write the story to lead up to it. You know, it's like connecting the dots backwards. I can tell you exactly how come I wound up on your show in my life by traveling the points back. But it's always been, we used to sit around the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale. It's funny, I just had lunch with Richie Tinkin that owns the comic strip. And we used to sit around with the comics, and nobody, out of all the comics I know and all the comics that they've known, none of us know one person that even knows somebody that claims to have ever written one of the jokes.
Right. Never.
You know,
never.
I mean, where, But you know what? Where are balls?
The amazing thing is nobody claims to.
But
there should be liars at least. That's the part that bothers me.
The truth of it is, since man began, we've gone to the bathroom, we've had sex, we've had runny noses, everything. For us to think that we can come up with something new, I mean, there's books from the 1200s that are, you know, volumes of fart jokes. They just are. Yeah. I mean, nobody can. The Gershon Legman thing, he was a pen pal.
I was just
going
to get to Gershon Legman.
He's a good friend.
Tell people who he is, because
Gershon Legman was the foremost erotic folklorist. He left the University of Pennsylvania because he couldn't get any money because people didn't want to give him money to research dirty jokes. But it couldn't be more of a part of Americana. And he went to the south of France. He lived in Cannes. You don't know my history. There was this horrible book that used to come out of Texas called Sex to Sexty. It was like a...
Sure.
And I was missing some volumes. I sent... Listen, Legman had all the issues because he wrote for them.
Yeah.
I sent him money. He took the bus to Cannes, Xeroxed the pages, and sent them back to me. And then I'd send him money for wine. We had this ridiculous relationship. I was friends with him. This is in 1980. I don't know if it's...
Well, let me just give some story here. The joke, The Aristocrats, which started the movie, The Aristocrats, is the last joke in the book, The Anatomy of a Dirty Joke, by Gershon Legman. And Jay Marshall. Did you ever meet Jay?
I didn't, but I stole one of his jokes from my... That's the one joke in my act that I say, here's a joke I took from a guy in The Aristocrats who's passed away. I do the Cub Scout joke.
Oh, yeah, it's so fabulous. Funny. Well, Jay is the one who told Gershon that
And
joke.
I'm aware of that.
And he told him The Aristocrats. And, of course, he remembers Jay died last year, and Jay was about 90. And Jay says when he was 12 in vaudeville, he heard The Aristocrats. And I believe it's a shame you two never got together, because I believe Jay Marshall would have given you a run for your money. He knew. I mean, there was never a joke I could tell Jay that he hadn't heard.
Now, the beauty of this is... I was friends with Legman. I'm a voracious joke guy. Mm-hmm. I gotta get all. That's why I needed all the sex to sexies, right? So you know they sell these things.
Needed is the important verb.
They sell these things. If you open a comic book or a magazine, it says you can get 12 books for $1.99.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's a book you like, and here's Rationale of the Dirty Joke, Part 2 by Gershon Legman. They must have had an overrun.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't selling. Now, who's gonna buy them besides me and you? So I sent for this thing. It's every dirty joke in the world.
Astonishing.
His explanations are irregular, but at least the jokes are in italics. So if you just want a joke book, it's the best. So this is the second series. There's no such thing as the internet. It's 1980.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find the first series. The preface, he's long-winded. His preface is 40 pages.
Yep.
At the end it says, G. Legman, Valbonne, France, with the zip code.
Yeah.
I know nothing. I write a letter to the guy. I got to get a copy.
Why didn't I do that?
Hold on. I said, I got to get a copy of the first series.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if that's enough address. I just mail it. And, of course, then on the separate cover, I sent my CD. You know, the Jackie crap.
Sure.
I get a letter from him 3 weeks later. What a wonderful package. So nice. I have two copies of the first series. I don't need two. I'll sell you one for $18. I sent him $18. My copy of the first series has his corrections. He thinks there's going to be a second printing. He's got his corrections and his autograph to a sit-down, to a stand-up legend from a sit-down legend, G. Legman. It's my prized possession.
Oh.
So me and him are writing back and forth. I'm sending the money to go get wine because he's got no money. He's over there. Everybody tells me you don't want to meet him because he's a vicious, horrible man. If you just communicate with him via letters.
Who did you talk to that had met him?
Reinhold Ammon.
Who's that?
Maledicta Press.
Oh, sure. Okay, sure.
We're being very cryptic. I don't mean to be rude to you.
Well, explain
so,
any of that.
But Gershon Legman collected erotic folklore from 1920, I think, or so on. He not only wrote down the jokes, he wrote down where he got them and his opinions of them. His life's premise was you are totally defined by what you think is funny, which is pretty astute. Now, listen to this. So I don't know about the Aristocrats. I know the joke.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling a joke. I told a joke to Gilbert 25 years ago.
Sure.
Provenza had to put me in a movie because I told him the joke. All right. So I've been telling this joke, and each time I never got crazy like with the babies. And
you also jump on the floor.
Well, when I was
swimming
on the floor for you guys, I was recreating the time I knew I was quitting stand up and just going to do radio full time, and I was in Zany's in Nashville, and I literally flew across the barroom floor on my stomach with the punchline, and I was that's what I was recreating. But I always made it a little dirtier and a little dirtier, and it was my favorite joke, okay? I don't know why. I was laughing at something different. What I laugh at is the worst band in the worst Holiday Inn has the name The Amazing Spangled Terrific Dynamos, and meanwhile it's this cross-eyed guy and his brother. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's like the hype of show business is one way of looking at that joke. So I always told it and got such a kick out of talent because it's so much fun. And his premise is you're defined by what you think is funny. And I found every joke. You talk about stealing. I found, you know, so many jokes. There's a joke that's made, you could say, somebody had to sit down and write that for Rodney. It's a Rodney joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, a guy told me, I told a guy my wife cut me down to 3 times a week. He said, oh, that's nothing. I know a couple guys she cut out altogether. You know? He's got that listed. 1863, it's two black guys talking dressed as Union soldiers.
Oh.
He's quoting from 18, and it's that joke that sounds like it was written. There's nothing new under the sun. So all of a sudden, sometimes you start the fact that Gershon's books are so thick that you can only read a few pages at a time.
Oh, I know.
Right? So I see that.
I did read both of them, though. I want to give credit.
Right. But it takes time, right? It's our Bible. But the joke, I see the aristocrats, and his premise is you're defined by what you think is funny. And here's the joke that I think is the funniest joke in the world. The following joke was told to me by a fellow whose family lived in squalor with the couple battling for 40 years, but they never split up and divorced because they wanted to stay together for the good of the children. He described my life. I fell down. And that's when I took that joke with that introduction and put it in on my website and then put my version the way I tell it because I had just had a big discussion with Robert Schimmel. He came up to me at Governor's and said, hey, there's this great joke I was talking to Rodney Dangerfield about. And he went to start. I said, oh, the aristocrats. He goes, nobody knows that joke. And, you know, I said, come on, Schimmel, please. This is many years ago. So I put both versions on my website. And when you guys came to me, you said, we did a search on the aristocrats, and we only got two hits, and they were those two pages.
Yeah,
exactly. And here, his premise, Jay Marshall must have been raised in the same household I was raised in. And it was just so astute. And then, in homage to Legman, when I came out with my filthy joke book, the aristocrats is the last joke on the last page of my joke.
Yeah. It always has to be the last joke on the last page.
It really does.
And I really hope, Jackie, well, they got, you know, you're not that old. You're not as old as Henny Youngman was.
No, there
should be plenty of time for some young kid to rip you off.
Oh, I
Because the idea of getting together in a bar, and telling just dirty jokes. And what I love about your act is if you go see Carlin, you know, you're not repeating something word for word to your friends the next day. It's something beyond that. But Jackie is telling jokes. You can tell. This is Ben Gillette, Jackie Martling. Go get his
Are we done already?
We're done. An hour went by, man.
Vail Levitt Hall, 8 p.m. in Riverhead with Cadillac Moon on Saturday night. Penn, this lasted 5 seconds.
And I'm not tonight at the Knickerbocker.
Tell Teller I said hello.
I shall.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
We'll be right back.